is a show from Radio.
Yeah.
This is the passage suspensions event on a moving train between Manchester and London. My name is David Roussel, and I'm here with a group of fellow travelers as we accelerate into a week which is with us and here to come, witnessing a shared potential.
Hello. Hi, it's Agatha.
Catherine Carey. Speaking louder than the woman who's telling us where we're going, where we may not want to go.
Cole Robertson, and the sandwiches sound good. John Hardy. His name is Genius John. Donald Tirabasso as video. Eric Clinton.
Jasper, Eric. I guess not. Oh, yes. And there's the
right? The following is an excerpt from the philosopher Alfred North Whitehead's book, Adventures of Ideas, first published in 1933. Whitehead's process philosophy, and particularly his theories of time and space, have been influential in our thinking about suspensions events. The following passage is from Whitehead's chapter, Past, Present, Future.
Suspensions can be both physical and conceptual, extensive and intensive, embodied and incorporeal, infrastructural and atmospheric. They invite us to attend to passages of experience that are complicit with social ordering and yet resistant to regimes of compliance and control.
The past has an objective existence in the present, which lies in the future beyond itself. But the sense in which the future can be said to be imminent in occasions antecedent to itself, and the sense in which contemporary occasions are imminent in each other, are not so evident in terms of a doctrine of a subject-object structure of experience. It would be simpler first to concentrate upon the relation of the future to the present. It is evident that the future certainly is something for the present. The most familiar habits of humankind witness to this fact. Legal contracts, social understandings of every type, ambitions, anxieties, railway timetables are futile gestures of consciousness apart from the fact that the present bears in its own realized constitution relationships to a future beyond itself.
There was nothing.
Cut away the future, and the present collapses.
There was nothing
emptied
at all.
Emptied of its proper content.
Either moving or non-moving.
Immediate existence requires the insertion of the future in the crannies of the present.
There was no sun.
In considering our direct observation of the past or
of
future,
there were no planets, no stars.
We should confine ourselves to time spans of the order of magnitude of a second, or even of fractions of a second.
There was no day, no night.
If we keep ourselves to this short-range
intuition,
assuredly the future is not nothing. It lives actively
in
its antecedent world.
There was no form, no taste.
Each moment of experience confesses itself to be a transition between two worlds.
There was only pure reality.
The immediate past and the immediate future. This is the persistent delivery of common sense.
There was nothing at all.
Also, this immediate future is imminent in the present with some degree of structural
definition. Not graspable definition. By mind or senses or speech.
The difficulty lies in the explanation of this imminence in terms of the subject-object structure of experience. In the present,
there were
the
no
future
planets,
occasions,
no stars,
as individual
no
realities with their measure
there was
of absolute
no day
completeness
or night.
Are non-existent.
No
thus,
sound.
The future must be imminent
no
in
touch.
The present in some different
no
sense
smell,
to the objective
no
immortality of the individual
without
occasions
change.
Of the past. In the present, there are no individual occasions belonging to the
only
future.
Only pure reality.
The present contains the utmost verge of such realized individuality. The whole doctrine of the future is to be understood in terms of the process of self-completion of each individual actual occasion.
One of the most difficult things about everything we're doing right now is my knees are in the corridor and everybody wants to go there.
The loneliest picket lines going, a woman by herself on the top of a crane. For Korean, South Korean labor activist Kim Jin-suk, crane number 85 at the Busan shipyard is her soapbox to demand workers' rights and the reversal of a local shipbuilder's plans to lay off around 400 employees. Kim's case has become a cause celebre in South Korea, where there is growing anger among the middle and working classes towards the government's business-friendly policies and workers' failure to get a slice of the big company's profits. Kim and 700 others have gone on strike against the layoffs. An agreement to go back to work was reached last month, but she and about 100 others refused to give up their protest. And she has shown that she is prepared for the long haul. She has already been on top of the crane, 35 meters off the ground, for 188 days. The 51-year-old former welder sleeps in the crane's cab and has so far seen out sub-zero temperatures, a typhoon, a heat wave, and lashing monsoon rains. She has no shower and she uses a bucket as a toilet. Every day is a life-and-death battle, she told Reuters by telephone, adding the company's private guards had prevented some food and books from being delivered to her by supporters, but she had enough to survive. Bad weather and a food problem here is not a big deal compared to what people are fighting down there. Analysts say that the growing divide between the rich and poor, rising youth unemployment and inflation shape up the biggest issues confronting Lee Myung-bak in its final 8 months of his presidency. Tax agency data shows the wage disparity is deepening in Asia's fourth biggest economy, with the top 20% of income earners taking home nearly three quarters of the urns, he told me. Juan Tae Kang, a political expert at Seoul National University, says Kim has attracted growing support due to the growing frustration among blue-collar workers and the unemployed. It is closely related to the kind of oppressed response by the government to the labor movement and labor market in general, he said. Big businesses are enjoying quite a favorable situation under the Lim Myung-bak government. Excuse me for the mispronunciation of the word. Violence. On the weekend, more than 7,000 people rallied at Busan, South Korea's second largest city with a population of 3.9 million, in support of Kim's sit-in, arriving in a caravan of about 185 so-called hope buses. But they failed to get close to the crane. Waves of riot police stopped them a few hundred meters short of the dockyard. The protests turned violent, and police used water cannon mixed with tear gas fluids to disperse the crowd. Police said there were about 50 arrests. A spokesman for Hanjin Heavy Industries and Construction said most of those joining the rally had nothing to do with the labor issue. They are politicizing in the situation which has already been agreed to, he said, referring to an agreement to end the strike on June 27th. I couldn't see or hear anything of the protest, Kim said, adding she was kept updated throughout the clashes by her supporters on the internet. She has over 18,000 followers on Twitter. If last week's numbers are anything to go by, there should be even more protesters at another Hope Bus rally in August. In June, a few hundred turned out at a pro-Kim demonstration. Then protesters climbed over a wall with ladders to enter the shipyard. One of the organizers of the Hope Bus movement, poet Song Kyung-dong, said increases in temporary positions and layoffs have raised a sense of insecurity in South Korea. People do not talk about it, but there is an inherent anger about this, and this is where the solidarity has emerged from, he said, according to the left-wing Han Kodyo newspaper. Rising anger. South Korea is no stranger to protests, with strong union and student movements staging often violent rallies over the past few decades. Protesters themselves have resorted to extreme tactics, even committing suicide during demonstrations. Kim recalled a Hanjin union leader's suicide in 2003 on the same crane during a similar protest. In the past couple of years, the Lee administration has moved to rein in the union movement and quickly moved to break up strikes. Some critics say he's being too heavy-handed and risks further alienating himself from the working class. In May, Lee vowed to crack down on strikes that cut across industries, saying the public is never going to forgive any attempt to undermine an entire industry through a strike at one workplace.
And they were talking about how
Lee's comments came after what the government sent in 2,500 riot police to break up a strike at an auto parts maker that had threatened to disrupt production of Hyundai Motor and Kia Motors, whose combined sales are
your mind has already got them.
In a show of force, riot police decked out in body armor and equipped with shields protesters by about 5-1. Lee argued the striking factory workers were, in fact, relatively well paid, taking home an average of 7 million won,
$65,000
a year. This week, British lender Standard Charter said it had suspended operations to 43 of 392 branches of South Korean banking unit due to failed negotiations to reach an agreement with striking workers. As well as union-led protests, there has also been a rise in demonstrations against a rising university tuition fees, as well as protesters by farmers against a U.S. free trade deal. Reuters, Market News, July 12, 2011, 11:27 a.m., 8 years ago. The article, Woman Striker Rallies Korea Workers from the Top of a Crane.
Your mind has already got them with you. You invent the future with your mind. So one of the three reasons cuts can be irritating is that you're to invent the future before it happens. Also why when somebody trips as they're heading towards you, you laugh because you're not really laughing at them tripping, which could be funny, but you're actually it's because it messed up your mind. You already expect them to be with you and they're flat on their faces.
Like waiting for your child to come out of school for the day or the moment after a satisfying sigh.
Oh, no, we just know that we will see.
One of the starting points for our experiments with suspension is the idea that capitalism largely controls how space and time are experienced, both individually and in a social and ecological context. We're interested in how artistic practices can temporarily suspend this kind of capitalistic control, altering the felt qualities of space and time by experimenting with alternative ways of sensing, moving, participating, and relating in public spaces. But we're also exploring how these kinds of suspensions already happen all the time. For instance, through quite everyday experiences like talking to a stranger, or daydreaming on the train, or waiting for a child to fall asleep. We think these everyday moments of suspension might be places where alternative forms of life might be lived. Places of fleeting resistance to the constant commodification of life under capitalism. We're really interested to hear from listeners who have their own examples of suspensions. We're interested in this kind of artfulness of the everyday, or what the philosopher Alfred North Whitehead called an art of life. So an important part of the suspensions event is breaking down conventional barriers between art, academic theory and practice, and everyday life. We're not necessarily aiming for some kind of major social transformation at the level of policy or governance, but rather for minor movements and transitions in how people experience and live their relations with everyday places and times. I think if we can open up some new trajectories for these kinds of minor movements, for recognizing the potentials of suspensions in the everyday, then hopefully we can pave the way for future events that can work transformatively across the arts, theory, and the social.
Found myself crossing the Sumida River and arriving on the banks of Arakawa. I sat by the water for a long time, absent-minded and sleep-deprived, by sustaining a sense of lucidity and clarity.
Hey,
better bending, better bending, better bending, better bending.
울었습니다. 50이 넘은 사내가 10년도 더 지난 일로 술잔에 눈물 콧물을 빠뜨리는 걸 보면서 우리 모두에게 박창수란 이름은 세월의 무게를 덮을 수 없는 아픔이구나 생각했습니다.
Event broadcast from the Virgin Atlantic 11:40 train from London Euston to Manchester Piccadilly. Brought to you by artist Catherine Carey, that would be me, researcher David.
A live transmission from a moving train between London Euston and Manchester Piccadilly, broadcasting from 11:40 to 13:46. Passage is co-curated by Agatha Kick and Ania Mokshika as interruptive Cora, David Roussel Biosocial Lab, Manchester Metropolitan University, and Catherine Carey, Royal College of Art / Sense Lab. This train journey, this passage, is one of seven short suspensions events in and between London and Manchester. We go live to Passages Travellers now.
Here we go.
End of transmission. Find us on the internet, radia.fm.